there's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. It's our anniversary, so we're offering 25% off the entire store. Valid April 10th to the 14th. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online now at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you, just as you are.
Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's time to talk to the professor, John Clayton. John, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. We just, I don't know if you heard any of the Ken Norton presser that he was doing, but it was kind of interesting. Somebody asked him about his dad, you know, and being a boxer. He was talking about the adversity that, you know, one week he would be, you know, toast of the town, then a few months later it'd be like, oh, he needs to retire, and then he, what'd he say, he hit Ali in the jaw and knocked him out, and, you know, just with all the ups and downs and kind of comparing, it was kind of interesting to hear from him.
No doubt. I mean, you know, what a great second-generation athlete. He was such a great player, and I'm happy for him that the season is ending like it is, because so many people in this town wanted him out, and I think it shows that he's doing a real good job coaching this team.
You know, and I always say this, I think of all the coaches, Jack Del Rio had a pretty good career. Ron Rivera, an okay career. I mean, he was kind of more of a backup, but just great coaches. But as far as coaches that played in the NFL, I think he's the best player. I think he's the best player that's coaching, because he had won back-to-back Super Bowls, I think with different teams. He was both with Dallas, San Francisco. My senior year, I remember in the Rose Bowl, we played UCLA and went out for the coin toss, and he was the captain on the other side. And I remember looking at that dude with that big jaw of his, and I remember he was looking at my knee braces, because I had two knee braces on, and he was looking at like, what do you got going on there? But I'm sure he doesn't remember that. No. But I mean, he was a really good player. But he was talking a little bit about Jordan Brooks. I thought it was interesting, John. He said, you know, the guy's trying to be a rookie, trying to act like a rookie, but he's also trying to be a pro, and he's kind of going through all these different things. But I remember thinking back to when they drafted Jordan Brooks, John, I just kind of started laughing, because I thought, this is such a Seahawk pick. Mm-hmm. They didn't really need linebackers. They had, you know, Cody and Ben Burkervin coming along. And then, you know, of course, they have Bobby and KJ. But, man, Jordan Brooks has worked out. They were right, man. That was for the 27th pick. He has been maybe the best first rounder, maybe since, you know, Bruce Irvin, or maybe he's better than Bruce Irvin. I don't know. What do you think?
It could be, yeah. But and understand, it's like, you know, the intention wasn't to take him at 27. The intention was to trade back into the second round and try to get him. And, you know, there was no movement, because, you know, Green Bay was the only team considering moving up, and they did it with Jordan Love, and that fell short of what Seattle was able to do. And so now, you know, it's like, okay, if you have no trade options, you got to make your choice. And even though they would have preferred to get him in the second round and get some extra value for him, then, you know, you take him, and it worked out. You know, it's really tough. And I think this is what drives me crazy, because, you know, I studied this so closely, is that if you're picking between 21 and 32, there's a 75% chance that that player is not going to get a second contract, because, you know, to get a second contract or get the 50-year option, you almost have to play like a Pro Bowler. And, you know, you may have maybe two or three, maybe four at the most each year that are going to be at that level. Like Kenny Clark of Green Bay, he was able to make it. You know, TJ Watt was able to make it, but very few do. And so because of that, it's like, you know, you take a player, and it's kind of like the Jermaine Ifedi situation, where it's like you have Ifedi in the first round. Well, he's not playing like a first rounder. Well, it's like, well, we have a second-round grade on him, but you know, we couldn't get a trade made, and so we took the best player that we thought we could get. But that's the thing that I think people tend to forget, because when they think first-rounder, they think, well, if he doesn't play like a Pro Bowler, he's no good. Well, it's hard to find a Pro Bowler between 21 and 32, because they all pretty much have second-round grades.
That is very interesting, John. That's why we have you on. Is that a database that you have?
I have worksheets on it.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true, because, and then, you know, I think for, like, I know John Schneider, because everybody gets all caught up in the first round thing, you know, but there's a difference. And I know that, you know, at one point, you know, I know he had like 10 or 12 guys ranked as first round players just because they're picked in the first round. That's why they trade back a lot of times. But yeah, so you said 75% don't get to their second contract.
And again, it's understandable because, again, you know, to get that second contract, the fifth year option, which isn't a second contract, but that's going to be, you know, $10+ million. And so you have to pay him like a Pro Bowler. And then if you get him into a contract, it's going to be a big contract. And that, you know, doesn't necessarily work out. And so then, you know, the classic year. And of course, this is just taking into effect a normal draft. I mean, you go back into the draft for Jermaine Ifedi, and I think there was only three players that ended up either getting the fifth year option or a contract extension. I know Kenny Clark was one of those guys from Green Bay, but it's hard to be able to get a Pro Bowl caliber player between 21 and 32. I mean, you can hit on it. I mean, Pittsburgh did with T.J. Watt, and maybe, you know, you can say that they may have hit on it with Jordan Brooks. But, you know, John Snyder has been ahead of the curve, you know, because he's up there with Baltimore and several other teams, Green Bay too. That it's like, okay, we realize it's going to be hard to get to that Pro Bowl player at 21 to 32. So let's see if we can trade down. New England's a team that does that too.
John, coming into this week, the Hawks are in a tricky situation, right? They've clinched. It's all about what Green Bay does, what New Orleans does. So it makes you question who's going to get what as far as playing time. When you look into that backfield and you look at Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, Carlos Hyde, do you expect Carlos Hyde and Penny to get more reps than Chris Carson on Sunday?
I don't know about more reps than Chris Carson, but I think they're going to get more reps because I think that they need to get more reps because, you know, it's, you know, I don't really call the situation tricky because, you know, they're going to be the third seed. It's going to take a lot for them to be able to move up to two, and I don't know if they can catch Green Bay at one. And of course, they won't know till the night because that Green Bay Chicago game is now flexed to Sunday night, and so it's like you can't even look at the scoreboard and be able to see where you stand. And so I think what it comes down to is that you make rational decisions. It's like, okay, who needs rest and who doesn't need rest? And I'm not saying you're like Pittsburgh and you take Ben Roethlisberger and several other starters, or Kansas City and you take your quarterback and, you know, take him out. But I think that you have to kind of monitor it, because the most important thing now, because, you know, the difference between third and second place when there's no fans in the stands isn't that significant at this stage. Sure, the opponent you face may be different, but I think in the end, the biggest thing that you need to do is just, you know, come out of the game healthy. You'd like to be able to win, and right now you think that you know, there's still a decent chance that they should be able to win even with less players because of all the players that are going to be out for San Francisco, you know, because no Richard Sherman, you know, they're not going to have Trent Williams, you know, their wide receiving core is out because Debo Samuel's on injured reserve, and you've got Brandon Ayuk with a high ankle sprain. Robbie Gould, the kicker, he had a positive test for COVID-19. So it's like they're missing so many players. In fact, it's interesting is that here's San Francisco at 6-9, and they may have more players miss the game, you know, with decisions because of injuries, and the Seahawks would if they elect to bench players.
Yeah, hey, John, we were talking about the fact that whoever wins this game has a chance to have the only winning record in the NFC West. Because if the Seahawks win, they'll be 4-2 against the rest of the NFC West because they lost to the Rams and Arizona. And then same thing with San Francisco. So they've done a pretty good job of beating up both Arizona and the Rams.
Well, that's what I thought the key to this season was, and particularly with that 5-0 start. And I know that four of the five teams didn't have winning records, but they had winning quarterbacks, you know, maybe with one exception being Ryan Fitzpatrick, but, you know, he's no slouch. And so to go 5-0, you know, that's why I started to, you know, rationalize, okay, here's where the key things is. You know, it's like worst case scenario, they go 8-2 in the non-division games, and best case scenario, they go 10-0. Well, they went 8-2. And so now if you can just win the division at 4-2 and have the best record, then you're a 12-win season. That's great. Again, it'd be nice to have that Giant game back and go to 13, but it just didn't happen. But no, I think that they accounted for him well, and this is a good division. Although the weird part is the way it's finishing up, it's not as good as we thought it was going to be, because, you know, here's the Rams, you know, no Cooper Kupp, you know, they've got John Wolford at quarterback, you know, they've got no Andrew Whitworth. You know, they've got so many question marks right now. And then you've got Arizona with a banged up Kyler Murray, you know, San Francisco with CJ Beathard and a lot of missing parts there. So, you know, it's fascinating to kind of watch the end of the NFC West season where Seattle's come out healthier and so much ahead.
John, I think it's pronounced beat hard.
No, it's not. Bethard. Remember, but, it's like he is the nephew or
that's right.
Bobby Bethard. That's everybody in the morning calls him Beathart, but it's Bethard.
Yeah, that Danny does, right?
Danny calls him Beathart all the time.
Yeah, because last year when I was on the show, I told him my wife looked at his name on his nameplate, and she goes, "Is that guy's name really Beathart?" Like, no, it's Bethard.
Yeah,
and so we called him Beathart on the show for forever.
Yeah, I mean he was related to a Hall of Fame general manager who I talked to so many times.
Have you?
In fact, what's great is Bobby will occasionally just give me a call and just see how I'm doing.
That's awesome. You know, I got a phone call from him my senior year, and he was the GM of the Chargers at the time. And I remember he asked me about, because you know some of the GMs, they just want to talk to you and see what kind of guy you are. And I happened to be home. I don't even know how in the heck did we talk on the phone back then, John. I had to have been in my room with the hard line, telephone. But he called.
Was that like with the digital dial?
Yeah, it might have had the buttons, not the the ringer thing.
Oh, okay.
But I did have to crank the phone before I didn't have to do that. But I remember he said something about another guy that you know very well, Marvin Demoff, because he asked me, he goes, "Well, who's your agent?" And I said, "Marvin Demoff." And he goes, "Anybody that doesn't like Marvin is a jerk." That's what Bobby Bethard told me. So anyway, and Marvin did a phenomenal job for me. He was the best.
Yeah, I think he also represented Bobby, too.
Oh, he did?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Well, I'll say this, that Marvin got me more money than I was worth. That's the best compliment I can pay to
him. Well, let's put it this way. It's like I can tell you this as a fact is that, not that he was promoting the idea of doing all the database stuff that I do, but he's the one that educated me enough to know it's like I got to get a database for all this stuff. And so, he taught me more about NFL negotiations and contracts than anybody I've been involved with.
Is that Marvin or Bobby?
Marvin.
Yeah.
Marvin.
Yep, another good guy. Yep.
In fact, and you're ready for this.
Yeah.
Marvin calls me up one time. He says, "John, I got to let you know this. There's three teams interested in hiring you as a salary cap guy."
Oh, because of your databases.
Yeah.
And
I mean, basically, me talking about all the contracts and things of that nature. And, this is at a time, with the Chargers that Marty Herney, former writer for the Washington Times, who covered the Redskins, he got hired in one of the roles that would have been offered to me. But again, it's like, I don't want to be tied to a team. I want to be able to be neutral and be able to report about football and talk about football.
And we're glad you do, because we would not have you on every day at 4:00.
And he's here with us. John, what are the Jets going to do with their second pick?
Debatable right now, because I think there's so many questions right now about Justin Fields. You would think naturally it was going to be Justin Fields. And then, Zach Wilson, I think, is on a hotter rise right now. And, when I was talking back in New York earlier this week, that's where the debate is. It's like, okay, are you better served, taking, the Oregon tackle, which, of course, they took a tackle this year, Mika Becton, and he looks pretty good at left tackle. But you better serve to take the better, get him at the right tackle position, or you better serve to take the best wide receiver in the draft. And so I think right now it's in question. Now, is it in question whether they want a quarterback? No, they want a quarterback, because I think they'd like to move Sam Darnold. And, I think that they won't get a first-round pick, but they can get probably a second or a third or somewhere in that neighborhood. But right now the question mark is, how good is Justin Fields, and how good is Zach Wilson from BYU?
All right, Professor, we're going to take a little bit of a break here, and the 253 wants to know, he said, first of all, we know your stance on funk and country music.
Yeah.
Love funk, hate country.
100%.
Where do you stand on classic rock?
Classic rock, love it.
Love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, growing up in the rock age, it's like, how can you not? I mean, love heavy metal, obviously, with Slayer and everybody else.
That's right. They were your, theme song.
Exactly. So it's like that. And, of course, all the rock and roll songs and all that stuff. I mean, it's great. I mean, the only thing that just drives me crazy, because it gives me hives, is when I listen to country.
Well, to me, country is just sad.
No, it stinks. It's terrible.
Well, it's always like, my wife left me and my dog died. And sorry.
And the twanging guitar. And
I don't mean to alienate our country music.
I
like the country music crowd.
Yeah.
Good people. But I'm okay with it. I'm actually, Bump, you listen to country ever?
Yeah, I got some. I got a couple in the playlist. It's not. Okay. I mean, maybe 1% of the 1,000 songs on my phone are country, but there are a couple I can get with.
Yeah, there you go. All right, hey John, we were talking earlier about. Well, I want to revisit this with you. I mean, we've talked about this a number of times, but Chris Carson. First of all, you know, would he be a guy maybe that you would think they would just kind of limit his carries in this game to keep him fresh for the playoffs? And then, again, just going into the offseason, knowing the kind of year that he had, I don't think there's anything he can do in this game, or maybe not even in the playoffs, that would, you know, increase his value a ridiculous amount. But just where you are with him, he's played in, what, 11 games this year, and, you know, he's going into free agency and how the rest of the NFL may value him.
I just think that you have to play the game that, and see if you agree with me. You've got to find some way to keep Chris Carson because he means so much to the running game, and Shaquille Griffin because I think he means so much to the defense. Because if you get Shaquille Griffin back, you also get Shaquem Griffin back, and I think you have such a good feeling in the locker room because I think that, you know, Quentin is, you got Shaquille being respected and all that different stuff, and Shaquille I think is so much speed and talent, and you just have like a family there, and that's the one thing about this defense, particularly, you know, you start with the linebackers and it's a family situation. You know, they're all educated by, you know, Ken Norton Jr., the linebackers. And I think there's so much that's there that you don't want to break that up. But now the question is going to be, you know, is it going to be a franchise tag for one and a contract for the other? Of the two, the cheaper contract is going to be Chris Carson. But I don't know with his injuries if you want to do a multi-year deal. So maybe better to franchise him, and the franchise tag may be around the $8 million mark. And can you get Shaquille Griffin to take $12 or $13 million as opposed to asking for $15 to $16 million?
John, the NFC East has been wild all year. Who do you think ends up winning this thing?
The team that has to play the NFC East, that's pretty much it. Because, again, I think, you know, you look at Washington, but we still don't know about Alex Smith. If Alex Smith doesn't start, I mean, is Taylor Heineke going to be able to is he going to be able to do it? It sounds like a beer.
I think it's Heineken.
Is it Heineken? Yeah, Heineken. Yeah, right, exactly. So is a beer going to be able to win that game? The Giants, I mean, they still have a, you know, I guess a long shot chance. It's not going to be Dallas. So I'd give Washington the best chance because when you look at it, if they can get Alex back, you know, they won't have their best receiver, but they will have, you know, a decent enough quarterback and a good enough defense to try to be able to do something.
All right, John, how about this? We talked about this earlier. Pete Carroll, maybe his best coaching job. You know, I think Jake Heaps, Stacy, I think Stacy thought it was like 14, 15. I know Danny and Gallant said NFC coach of the year, NFC West coach of the year. Yeah, I'd agree with that. But, you know, as far as the whole COVID thing, I mean, he's really done a good job with that. I mean, making it into a competition. Look, that's part of it. Like the kicker, you know, the Niners may be without a kicker coming up in this
game. They will
game.
Be without a kicker.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're going to have – they're bringing the guy in off the practice squad. And I'm not sure if you got that news, John, but, yeah, I'm sure you have. But it's just everything that he's done. Not only that, you know, think about in the beginning of the year, it was all about passing, offense, no run game, and then he wasn't playing good defense. It was just totally not the character of a Pete Carroll team, yet he just adapted to it. So I just think there's a lot of reasons to make him coach.
There's such a similarity between he and Bill Belichick. Because, you know, when you look at Belichick, I know there's several years in the Super Bowl years where it's like you look at him and you say, I don't know if they're any good. It's like you look at the team and it's like, and I know there was like a 3-year straight period, particularly in one of the years that they won the Super Bowl, that it says, I don't know how good they are until they get to the playoffs. Because what Bill does, he keeps experimenting. He keeps on looking at the things. He keeps on changing, adapting. And then once he finds what he thinks is the best, then they start to peak in December and then they do well in the playoffs. But so many times I looked at that, you know, that Patriot team and not know. And this was a classic example of kind of a Bill Belichick type of year. You know, they start out so bad on defense. You know, they had the injuries in the secondary. You know, they didn't have the pass rush. Then all of a sudden, they start hitting on the pass rush. They start getting healthier in the secondary. They start getting their running backs back. And think about the difference between this year and last year, where they finished the season, you know, basically with retired running backs and Travis Homer. And now they've got all three running backs and the chance to use them in the playoffs and get that running game and more balance. And so, yeah, I think that I don't know. I still don't know if it was his best coaching job. I mean, I think maybe 2014 might have been his best, you know, coming off the Super Bowl year, having, you know, a team that lost a couple key free agents and being able to get back to the Super Bowl. And with only one bad play call, it would have maybe two Super Bowl wins. But I think maybe the second year, but this is certainly one of his best. And by the way, how about Jameis Snacks Harrison?
Oh, yeah, he got picked up by Green Bay, huh?
Mm-hmm. Green Bay.
Yeah. I mean, that's the team that wanted to sign him. Mike Pettine has a background with him, and you can see that they've been wanting to get him for the longest time, and I'm sure that he sensed it.
All right, John. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Bob.
Tom Brady. He's done some great things in Tampa. Is the Super Bowl or bust for this guy, or is he going to work on that second year?
I hope the second year. I don't see why not. I think there's that commitment. He signed a 2-year deal. He wants to play the 2 years. They don't have a better quarterback to be able to replace him. And so I think that and it's working out, and he's getting better as the season is ending, kind of like he has so much in the in New England Patriots. So, no, I think he's going to be back next year.
Yeah, remember when John Elway retired?
Yeah.
That was kind of heartbreaking to me because I knew John, and I knew what a tough dude he was. But I remember he got up and he cried at his press conference. He's like, I just realized I can't do it anymore. I'm not really seeing any of that from Tom Brady, but we have seen some things that are kind of weird, like him not knowing what down it was. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some times where Arians was fairly critical of him, but it was weird to see those moments of him struggle, and I'm sure he has before, but it just never looked like it. And yet, you know, you've seen a few examples of that this year. It's kind of sad, honestly, to see. Now, I'm not saying he's done, because I'm like, you know, you may not want to face Tom Brady in the playoffs.
No.
You know, but
well, particularly now that he's throwing the ball deep better. When he was not throwing the ball deep, and, you know, he went through that one streak where he was 0 for 27 on passes 20 yards in the air, then I'm thinking, uh-oh, this is not looking good. It was kind of like Ben Roethlisberger for the 3.5 games that he was playing terrible. But you can see Tom's bounced back, Ben bounced back, and so they're going to be factors in the playoffs.
All right, John. Well, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on. That was a great stat you had. 21 through 32, 75% don't make it to their second contract.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, John. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up next, we're going to talk about Jamal Adams. He was on a podcast. Who was that with?
Peter King.
There we go. Peter King's podcast, and we've heard from him. I love listening to Jamal Adams. He is fantastic. He's a young guy. I like how direct he is, and always love hearing a quote or two from him. We'll talk about that next, and we'll hear from him on Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus.